Hello, friends. This is Pastor Harley Wheeler with the Broadway United Methodist Church. I'm here with you with another installation on our podcast about Joseph and his brother. Joseph's brothers don't come into Genesis chapter 41, which is where we are. We have Pharaoh of Egypt having dreams, Joseph still in prison, and called out of the prison to give Pharaoh the interpretation of the dreams, and then we hear what happens after it. This chapter, which is a phenomenal chapter, really gives us one picture that God's grace and his blessing and his love does extend to more than just the people of Israel and more than just the people that call him Lord. Egypt is a pagan land, and there was a grace done to them in the face of a famine and a time where they would endure terrible suffering. Help was sent to warn them and to make preparations, and in this grace also was tied up help and restoration which was given to God's people. We shouldn't look down on blessings given to people who don't acknowledge God. We can find that God's will is at work. It is at work for people's good, and it leads us to understand his ways better. The reading from 41 verses 1 through 16 is rather long, says, "After 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. And behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed grass. And behold, 7 other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the 7 attractive, plump cows. And Pharaoh awoke. And he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. And behold, 7 ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on one stalk. And behold, after them sprouted 7 ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump, full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So in the morning his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, 'I remember my offenses today. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants, it put me and the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard. We dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with its own interpretation. A young Hebrew was there. He was with us, a servant to the captain of the guard, when we told him. He interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And he interpreted to us, as he interpreted to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged.' Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came into Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it.' Joseph answered Pharaoh, 'It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer.'" So God will use even a pagan king who considers himself to be a god to both bring mercy to a land in crisis and to advance the cause of the covenant people Israel. Joseph will be an interesting figure, a believer who helps to rule a land of idolaters. His clear statement that it is God's power that has done this and God's wisdom that gives interpretation to dreams emphasizes his devotion to God. So in the midst of an idolatrous land, in the midst of a land that doesn't acknowledge God, and in the midst of a culture that doesn't acknowledge God, we are to follow Joseph to continue to acknowledge God and to give him the glory. Joseph's clear statement that dream interpretation is God's province and his denial that he himself is able to do anything supernatural and is an example of how to witness in such a context. That he takes over the fortune-telling dream interpretation franchise is a bigger deal for their culture than for ours. We would care very little who the most reliable astrologer is. We assume that they are all full of beans, as we might say. We don't expect to find such people in government. Although it is found in many Oriental countries that leaders and industry and government leaders do consult astrologers from time to time. People great and small in Pharaoh's day and in throughout the Mediterranean really consulted such persons and paid out large sums for the service. Before we assume that these people just had no sense at all, just realize that it would have been hard to prove with the state of actual science in that day, it would have been hard to prove that the astrologers and fortune tellers and dream interpreters didn't know what they were talking about. They would have some successes. they would have some, they would grow, wise in the ability of giving advice, and they would be around the centers of power and know some things. And God could, from time to time, guide them, and so could Satan, from time to time, give them a hint when it served his purposes. Although there would always be skepticism in that time, as well as in our time, much like, you know, we will say we don't believe everything the newspapers say, the fortune-telling professionals, as I said, could not usually be proven to be completely unreliable. As far as anyone knew, they were equipped to provide this guidance, and Joseph puts them all to shame and declares that the supremacy is God's. In fact, when we read the story, you can try to say, well, if you were living these events, what would you think? And it seems that even a person of a fairly simple common sense mind might hit upon the interpretation of this dream, and certainly people could give a plausible interpretation of the dream, but it just says that they could not. Do understand that another work of God sometimes is to shut the mouths of those whom he wants to keep silent, and this seems to be the case of the magicians and his wise men. The magicians, who would have been followers of all kinds of abstruse knowledge, hacks, we would say, ways around the firm progression of cause and effect. And they would claim to know many things. They would claim to have read many documents of, out of the deep past. And of course, mostly it was all wrong. Mostly they themselves were self-deceived, although many of them would, again, have a pretty good insight into human character and psychology. The wise men also are just, as it is that name, lovers of wisdom. And these also would have been trying to follow just a path of, well, what works in this world? What advice should be given to the ruler? In fact, the wise man, his dream job was giving advice to Pharaoh, and his secondary job would have been giving advice to lesser officials. A wise man might, for a fee, give some wisdom to a peasant, but I doubt that the peasant normally asked or would be able to pay. We find that 2 full years from the incident in chapter 40, where Joseph interpreted the dreams of the butler and the baker. And so we find that the butler, who was urged by Joseph to bring Joseph's case before Pharaoh, to have it looked into, to discover that he didn't deserve to be in prison and had done nothing wrong, the butler, of course, had done nothing about that. And, of course, he stands forever in Scripture as someone who was fairly selfish, worried about his own success, and not so much worried about somebody languishing in prison. And so the story presses on that Joseph is now brought out of the prison. He is cleaned up. He is put in good clothes and brought before Pharaoh and tells Pharaoh, indeed, it is God who can give the interpretation of a dream. The story continues on verse 17, where it says, Pharaoh said to Joseph, Behold, in my dream I was standing on the bank of the Nile. 7 cows, plump and attractive, came up out of the Nile, fed in the reed grass. 7 other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and thin, such as I have never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the thin, ugly cows ate up the first 7 plump cows. But when they had eaten them, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were still as ugly as at the beginning. Then I awoke. I also saw in my dream 7 ears growing on 1 stalk, full and good. 7 ears, withered, thin, and blighted by the east wind, sprouted up after them, and the thin ears swallowed up the 7 good ears. And I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one. The 7 lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the 7 empty ears blighted by the east wind are also 7 years of famine. As I told Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them will arise 7 years of famine. And all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land, and the plenty will be unknown in the land by reason of the famine that will follow, for it will be very severe. And the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it about. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the seven plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through famine. Joseph delivers the first extended prophetic speech recorded in the scriptures. He moves from telling the warning in the dream to providing advice for the benefit of the Egyptians. It seems to us that the interpretation and advice, again, seems somewhat obvious. There is a possibility, indeed, that as God is in charge of interpretations, he can bind and silence the soothsayers if it serves his purposes, and he can give sweetness to Joseph's voice, so that Joseph will be heeded and listened to. Joseph also shows great boldness. He has a confidence in God. Chapter 40 would have told him that indeed he can interpret dreams, or as more precisely, God can show him the interpretation of dreams, and Joseph has a walk with God that helps him to walk in an assurance that he's seeing this right. He is seeing what God wants to present in this dream. There is a part of our life which is where we walk closer and closer to be sure when we know God's voice. If Jesus is our shepherd, we are the sheep who hearken to his voice, who recognize the voice of our shepherd and recognize that his is the voice we should follow and not another. Of course, there's a room for what we would call the faithful doubt, for not being sure of what we should do, of looking at the world's events and saying, I'm just not sure exactly how the government should react. I'm not just sure how I would feel if I was this person or that person. I can recognize, certainly, because I have the commandments of God, I can recognize injustice. I can recognize jealousy and anger and hatred and greed for what they are. But the particular solutions, we may not be given them in detail. This is about the most detailed solution to a national problem, as is given in the Old Testament, although there are others that compare with it. So we also would understand that Joseph is a special case. We do not have a Christian history of speakers who are close to God, always and every time, knowing exactly what the leadership should do. We conduct ourselves with some humility. And humility brings us to the idea of dreams. It's good to stop just here for a moment to say to ourselves that here is someone who had a true dream, Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Now, first off, we might notice that there was a definite purpose in God sending Pharaoh this dream. It also was a dream that you didn't wake up from it and say, well, that was weird, and then go on about your day. Pharaoh's heart was troubled. He knew that something was afoot and that there was a message here. Indeed, he might have been supposing who indeed of all the gods would this message be from, and is given the surprise that it is the God of Israel and is the one true God. Pagan idolaters, people who had many gods, such as the Egyptians did, if you read their writings closely, they also allow that there is such a thing as God. They do refer to God in their prayers and in their writings. It was just generally supposed among those who worshiped many gods that the one God, when they thought of such a person behind all the other gods, the power behind all powers, was probably uncaring. It was probably that one that it may be best if you didn't draw that God's attention to you. Now, this, of course, is a failure of the pagan thought, and also is a failure of modern scientific thought that looks at the vastness of the universe and discovers that we are indeed insignificant, as they say. But actually, it is the universe, the solar system, for instance, that is so large, but it is insignificant because it doesn't give us a sign of anything, unless we look with the eyes of faith and see the providence of God for placing us at a certain distance from the sun, for allowing our outer solar system to be swept by larger planets that clear up comets, asteroids, and meteorites that otherwise might do untold damage to us. But these things, of course, were beyond science when it first saw the immensity of the distances between the planets. It really told us nothing. It didn't tell us what we mean or what we're all about or what we are here for, and it still really doesn't say those interesting things. Am I doomed or saved? Is there love, or is there just life that goes on? These are the interesting questions. Finding out the distance in exact miles between here and the planet Pluto is not nearly as interesting as knowing whether there is a God who loves me. But dreams. To return to dreams. Are dreams real, and do dreams say something? In fact, you can find both a serious psychologist of the last century talking about the interpretation of dreams, what they reveal about the subconscious mind, and of course, you can pick up in bookstores fairly cheap works that will tell you this dream means this and this dream means that. Interestingly, sometimes claiming to go clear back to the dream interpretation from the Mediterranean basin, Egypt, and the land from which Abraham came. Now, of course, these people did record what dreams meant, when, you know, in manuals and things. And interestingly, these are usually found on piles of rubbish that nobody was looking at anymore or decided was worth keeping. And because they're ancient does not mean they are true. And so for this case, we might say that traditional dream interpretation doesn't hold any water. It doesn't have any reliability. And when modern psychology would say, if you're having these dreams, it indicates this, one must always remember they're telling you something that's going on in your subconscious mind. Realize that means it's subconscious. It means you don't know anything about it. In fact, it does not express itself consciously. It is wisdom to know that your own character and your own inner life is deep, and there are depths beyond which you actually cannot see, but you have a conscious mind and make conscious choices. You may sometimes be powered or sometimes surprised by things that well up from you know not where, emotional responses, and indeed things that provoke anxiety in us that we may indeed not exactly know the cause, or perhaps could be led by talking through it to understand what the cause is. But these are actually an exception. We generally live in a life of consciousness, and we are quite aware of making choices and deciding to have made those choices. And frankly, any other interpretation of human life doesn't make one lick of sense. But what are dreams? Should we pay attention to our dreams? We must first here stop to remember that people have done a great deal of damage by taking someone's dream or their own and attaching an interpretation to it and saying, God has shown us this. Well, God isn't going to show you things that bring darkness, that bring division, that break up families or marriages, that cause people to commit sins, so that you don't have dreams that say you should sleep with your neighbor's wife. You don't have dreams that should say that that people you dislike should be killed, or that you're welcome to take all sorts of property that does not belong to you. God will not give a message that contradicts his written revealed word. And so also we must just understand that from time out of mind, we have understood that some dreams just seem to come from the, you know, the mind reflecting on the things that happened during the day. There can also be an unbalanced or diseased state of mind that also can have a basis in problems of the body. I ate pizza before I went to bed, and here I had these dreams. And these are of no real significance. You can have dreams that actually reflect anger and evil going on in your heart, or sometimes, sadly, evil things that have happened. And they just sort of are replays of the darkness and the sin that is all around. You can then also find that some dreams can, of course, be deceptions sent to us by Satan. But some dreams can come from God. But always remember, when we come to this, we're talking about a subjective piece of information. It needs tested. It needs passed around to reliable spiritual advisors. And indeed, there isn't a person I can name who lived guided by their dreams and made any kind of success out of it. So dreams are dreams. A truly powerful and significant dream it may need looked at, but don't base your life and your actions upon that much subjective information that cannot be tested, that cannot be put up to the shared experience of somebody beside you. They are really just dreams. This scripture goes on, taking up at verse 37. Well, what happens here? You know, it is interesting that Joseph has said, you ought to appoint a wise man. And I've had people say that he's not actually angling for the job. He is not stupid. He knows that this might be his big chance. But it is just the word that Pharaoh needs to do. He needs to have somebody do the job of taking up the extra food. And so verse 37 says, "And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and all his servants too. And the Pharaoh said to his servants, 'Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God?' Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Since God has shown you all this, there's none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you.' And Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'See, I have set you over the land of Egypt.' Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he made him ride in his second chariot. And they called out before him, 'Bow the knee.' And thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt.' And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him in marriage to Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh, went through all the land of Egypt. During the 7 plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly. And they gathered up all the food of these 7 years, which occurred in the land of Egypt, and put the food in the cities. He put in every city the food from the fields around it, and Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he ceased to measure it. Before the year of famine came, 2 sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, bore them to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for Manasseh sounds like the Hebrew for making to forget. For he said, 'God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house.' The name of the second he called Ephraim. Ephraim sounds like the Hebrew word for making fruitful. And he said, 'For God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction.' The 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come. As Joseph had said, there was famine in all lands, but in the land of Egypt there was bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, 'Go to Joseph. What he says to you, do.' So when the famine had spread over all the land, Pharaoh opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth. Joseph is now as successful as a man as anyone in his time could hope to be. Significantly, he does not aspire, nor is he led to try to become Pharaoh. Things like that had happened before. Joseph's saving of excess in good years is sound advice and is often taught as the Joseph principle. God's stewardship teaching is indeed part of the purpose of this chapter. When much is coming in, something should be laid by for the dangerous times. We just have to remember that also when we have saved all we should, we give away all we can. Joseph names his son Manasseh, sounding like forgetfulness, and Ephraim, sounding like the Hebrew word for twice fruitful. It's interesting. You could call them Hazy and Bumper if you wanted to. They may be actually quite fun names, even though they're in the Bible and have a grand tone. The tone of the whole chapter is grand. It's a storytelling tone. It repeats the same information again and again. When Pharaoh speaks to Joseph, the narrator could have said, "And so Pharaoh told Joseph the dreams." But it's a better story with the repetition. You can hear children following along, saying it to themselves, saying it to each other in the days after a story time when this part of Joseph's story was told. Children being told that saving is a good idea, that caution is a good idea, that actual wisdom and ability and leadership and insight comes from somebody who has the Spirit of God at work within them. Pharaoh gives the words, "the Spirit of God," and they're the same ones as in Genesis chapter 1, talking about the Spirit of God that hovered over the waters. There is a certain amount of faith present in the religious Egyptians who bow down before many gods. And so we are to understand that it is indeed declared by Pharaoh that the Spirit of God is at work in Joseph. And so we find that Joseph already has attained to greatness before his brothers ever bow down to him. As his original dreams, Joseph's original dreams said that they would, Joseph has found a real treasure, the presence of the Spirit of God. Now, Asenath, his wife, is daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. It is thought that this Potipharah is not at all the same person as Potiphar, who owned Joseph before. We do notice the similarity in the names, but we don't think we can make anything of it. There are some interesting things when Pharaoh says, that Pharaoh said, I set you over the land of Egypt, and you shall be over all my house, and my people shall order themselves as you command. It literally says, at your mouth, all my people shall kiss. And the name that that Pharaoh gives to Joseph, this very long-tailed Zaphnath-Paneah, it could be one who, it could be just pretty much a title such as prime minister. Some have looked at the syllables in the word and said that it's supposed to mean the treasury of glorious comfort, or the revealer of secrets, or some such thing, or even a term that means savior. These may be so, but they can't be known. As we turn from this story, just remember it is a good story. It's a true story. Story of someone who rose to greatness in Egypt, and God both saved him and saved his brothers. It is a story that the greatest of national movements might actually have their clearest design in working in a family and to reconcile others. As we recognize that this world is intertwined with many different causes and the hand of God in many places, this is a story that reminds us that God's concern, as far as our perspective is indeed a great love for us personally. How God bestows a personal love upon each and every one is part of his nature as a great and mighty God, far wiser, far more powerful, omnipresent, not bounded by time or space. This God has a great love for you. Joseph, being 30 years old, he spent about 13 years in prison. He will not see the inside of a prison again. He will not know want. He will not know danger. He will have one blessing after another. And he looks on the faces of his sons. And so we understand that God's care for his people is a very real thing. We can trust in his care. So Joseph's trust and faith in prison isn't stated specifically. But where would you be if you were Joseph? You knew that you could interpret dreams. And when the chance came, Joseph walked out in faith. Would you? So we close this study in Genesis chapter 41. Urge you, when it becomes available, it probably already is, to look at the podcast above Genesis 42, where it says that Joseph's brothers go to Egypt. Remember that God has his eye upon you. And so this has been Pastor Harley Wheeler with the Broadway United Methodist Church. And I just hope that today you are blessed.